Welcome to the Nottingham Business School Business Leaders Podcast, where business leaders tell their stories and share their insights. All our guests have a personal connection with Nottingham Business School. So listen, learn, enjoy, and share.
Welcome to another episode of the Nottingham Business School's Business Leaders Podcast with me, Mike Sassy. Dan Maher oversees the construction and maintenance of hundreds of millions of pounds of public roads and buildings. He is currently managing director of not just one, but two separate companies, our Property Services Partnership and Via East Midlands. Together, they are responsible for, among other things, highways maintenance, property design, consultancy services, and managing hundreds of council-owned buildings across Nottinghamshire. During more than four decades in and around the construction industry, Dan has worked in both public and private sectors. His teams have built partnerships that have changed the way in which taxpayers' money is spent. Dan Maher, welcome to this episode of the NBS Business Leaders Podcast.
Thank you.
So, official title, MD Arc Property Services and Via East Midlands, both companies are alternative service delivery models. So, to the layman, explain all that.
In simple terms, it's not a new term, but most of the council services are delivered by alternative service delivery models or other partnerships. Simplest way to say it is that you've got in-source services, and there'll always be the statutory services of adult services and children's services, teaching, schools and so forth. But you've got a lot of other services that have now moved into a space that sits between the private sector and the public sector. And Via East Midlands Limited, which is the highways and infrastructure part of the County Council's service delivery, and ARC Property Services Partnership Limited, which is the property side, have moved into that space. ARC Property Services Partnership Limited is a joint venture partnership between itself and Scape Group, between the County Council and Scape Group, and Via East Midlands is what they call a wholly owned subsidiary model. I won't get too worried about that, but basically they just sit outside ownership of the County Council to give it the freedoms you need to be able to deliver commercial models in that world.
And perhaps a simple way of describing this is to say we're probably talking 800 staff across two companies and £120 million of turnover.
Exactly.
Right, so these are big players.
They seem big, but when you've been in a while, it don't seem as big as that. But when you give numbers like that out, it is a big company. And they are big companies.
Yeah, it is. So, right back to the future. 40-odd years ago, this is a battle of the Northern accents, isn't it?
Yeah,
Sheffield,
I'm
Sunderland. So 40-odd years ago, back in Sheffield, where you grew up, and you still have the season ticket, obviously.
Sheffield United.
We've got to be careful about that, haven't I? Yeah. So you went to work for the local council. How did all that come about?
I often tell this story about why do you end up in any job. I'm going back to the 80s when I left. I left in 1983. That's when we had CSEs, O-levels, AOs, A-levels, ONCs and HNCs. Some of those are still around today. But I chose my subjects based on the teachers I liked. Simple as that, really. I did.
It's not a bad way of doing it, is it?
That's why I did it. I did the O-levels.
Keeps you enthusiastic.
A-levels, you go through. Why did I do that? I did A-level geography, geology, biology and general studies. And geography and geology, I chose those because you got field trips. I love field trips. Simple as that. And I often tell this story that when you're at school, you know, we had careers teachers, but it wasn't like it is today where people have got access to social media, understand a lot more what different businesses do. I don't think most people in my peer group at that time really knew what they wanted to do, unless your mum or dad were a lawyer or unless your mum or dad worked in the police force. Most of us just went through and enjoyed sport at school and enjoyed school life. And the big comprehensive I went to in Sheffield Jordan though, but it was based on the fact that most of us, if my mates were in a particular class, I'd want to be in that class. And it was simple as that. So after I'd done my A-levels and did fairly well in my A-levels, I got a place in Huddersfield Poly to do geology. Was I really committed to that? I don't know, it was just a thing you did. You know, people went to university, I had not got a clear plan in my mind what I wanted to do, probably just an extension, I wanted more field trips at a university setting. But then, when I were 18, childhood sweetheart, being honest, split up with my girlfriend, as most people do, you think you're going to be with someone forever, and it changed my life, and then decided I didn't want to leave Sheffield. I was quite a known bird. it wasn't for me, that university life, and I knew it, and that just helped me make that decision even more. So I stayed in Sheffield, and then I applied for three jobs. I had a number of jobs. I realised I've got to get a job. Well, my mum and dad said I had to go and get a job. I can't, if you're not going to uni, you're going to get a job. And I ended up three opportunities. One is a trainee committee administrator at South Yorkshire County Council. I'm quite good at English, done that well. And the second one was at British Telecom. And it was at that time, getting to one of the big utilities and you're made for life. That's how people thought. And then the other one was Sheffield City Council as a trainee, a management trainee. And the only reason I got into Sheffield City Council is because the guy who headed up that particular department knocked on my door and said, can you start early? So I started early. And actually, I got there and enjoyed it. I went as a management trainee in Sheffield City Council. That's when we had big direct service organisations, 20, 30,000 people living and working in local communities and delivering services. It wasn't like now. You literally lived in the area in which you worked. And I got the real good chance to do... I did an HNC in public administration, funded by the County Council. I then did my degree with them in HR. And why did I choose HR? Because I've been around every department inside the County Council. I was really lucky. So often, when I come back into public sector, you can't kid a kidder because I've done every one of them jobs. We didn't have computers, then we filed. I worked in HR, I worked in bonus, I worked in op development, I worked in civil engineering, I worked in every department. And then what we had to do was decide where we wanted to go. And I knew that I was quite a people person. So I went into training and development and got involved in running the council's apprenticeship programmes. And that's when I decided that that's the career I wanted and did my degree in human resource management at Sheffield Hallam University.
So it sounds like you learned your trade.
I did. I learned the hard way. And there's nothing wrong with that. I often see young people today and they're so talented. But there are some people who want to get to the top of the mountain without doing the climb. I did the climb. And there's nothing wrong in that. And that's if I said that to anybody, if you learn and you're patient and you learn, then it sticks within you. So you've got that experience and that learning, good and bad.
Okay. So you went from management trainee to managing director. So were there certain principles that you've have guided you on that journey?
I've always been an honest guy, and I believe in that. I often believe that, I always say this to young people coming to my organisations now, your reputation will either be made or lost within the first 2 or 3 weeks in employment. But people take a view of you. And it's hard then to get them shackles off your back in terms of what people's perceptions of you are.
First impressions.
First impressions matter, and they matter. And it's not always about being the brightest person. It's about having the right work ethic. And I think I had a really strong work ethic. I'm totally committed to any organisation in which I work. And it doesn't matter where I've worked throughout my career, I've took that into that commitment into every organisation. I give my heart and my soul, sometimes too much in terms of putting others, the organisation often before my own needs and my own ambitions. But it worked, paid for me. It worked out in the end.
Okay, so what are some of the biggest challenges you've faced?
I think that one of the biggest challenges I've had to learn very quickly throughout my career is that in any conversation or in any leadership role, you've got to be able to listen to understand rather than just listen to respond. Anybody can respond to a question, but you've got to really understand people. And that's my HR background, I think, in me, and my upbringing from my mum and dad, who were working class people, who worked really, really hard throughout their lives. I've tried to create a culture in any organisation that's a people-centric, and I've always tried to do that. And sometimes that's not always easy. If you've got a peripatetic workforce and you're working, when I did for Kia Construction, for example, and you spread from Arlo to North Tyneside, trying to create one culture is almost nigh impossible.
So how did you do it then?
Because you just lead by example. As a leader, I know you've had Sean Bowles on here from Morgan Sindall before, you just got to be authentic. You've got to be real. You know, nobody. I weren't born to be an MD. It just happens. You know, some of that is luck, some of that is chance, some of that is hard work. And you have to. I'd like to think I've got like a bit of ability inside. But I always remember that very early in my career, I always had one clear view, and that was to make sure I always appointed people better than me at what they did, and not being scared of doing that. But so I've got wherever I've gone, in particular as I've gone up to MD level, the directors that work for me, the management, are far better than me at what they do. My job is to like lead the orchestra and make sure I manage risk and I make sure I look after people because they're our greatest asset. You know, I talk about, people say to me about, you've built some really good things over the years. I go back and say, no, I've developed some really good people over the years. That's far more important than the buildings I've done.
And do you think that's at the heart of what good leaders do, successful leaders?
Yeah, I think as you're going through your career, we've all got ambition. And I look back now, my early years in construction and as a leader, when I first became a director, I think I was about 29 when I first became a director. Looking back now, was I ready? Probably not. Did I make lots of mistakes? Yeah, you bet I did. I made loads of mistakes, but I learned from my mistakes. And if anybody said they've never made a mistake, then they're lying, because you learn, as long as you learn from your mistakes. And I've seen good leaders and I've seen bad leaders, but I've been very, very lucky that throughout my career, four or five people have took me under the wing and mentored me as I've gone forward.
Okay, so do you pay it forward now? You do the same thing for others?
Yeah, I do.
And you think it's important?
It's very important. Very important. I'm in a very lucky position, just about to hit 60, that I have no more vested interests in terms of career development apart from leaving a legacy in what I do. But the trouble is that by the time you get to that point where you're quite a bit more wiser and you've learnt from your mistakes and you take the good and the bad and you create your own persona, I'm running out of time. So I'm getting ready for retirement over the next couple of years. And it's a bit frustrating, really, because I look back sometimes and think, God, if I knew, I only knew what I know now, I would have made a bigger impact.
Okay, so come on, here's your big opportunity. Tell me a few things.
I think first is as you're going through, as you start your career and you leave university or you leave school, it's being patient and understanding that your career develops over a long period. You're not going to get there. I've seen too many people who want to get there too quick and then it don't quite work out for them. You're better off just making sure you get a broad range of experience with different organisations. But alongside that journey, try and enjoy life as well, because quickly you go from being 18 or 21 to nearly 60, and it goes in a flash. So I've just made sure that throughout my career, I'd like to think wherever I've gone, if I have made mistakes, then I've not run away from it, I've stayed there and I've sorted the mistakes out. I honestly believe that anything in life can be sorted. Apart from probably death. Yeah. everything else can be sorted. Because it always does get sorted. We create that thought problem.
That's a remarkably positive view.
Happens. You tell me even in university here, you tell me of any problems you have on a day-to-day basis inside this, you know, school of journalism, everything gets solved in the end. Yeah. And often, what I try and do as a leader is, people bring problems to my doors, but I say, well, I'll leave them a bit. I said, well, you go away and think about it. By the time they've gone away and thought about it, they've solved the problem themselves. What a good leader is, you can take it, knowing when to take somebody's problem on and when to leave it with the person. Otherwise, they never learn. And I think I've got that balance right. I know when to step in. And I always remember a story when I worked with Kia Construction for nearly 10, 11 years. My MD were always on my shoulder when I know we're having trouble. And I don't know how he knew, but he knew. Yeah, he just knew how to do it. And I think I've picked that up a little bit, that I can walk through the office and can say good morning to all the team in both organisations. But by the way they respond, I know they've got a problem. So I log it and then I go back to that person a bit of time and just have a chat. And I've just seemed to pick up that sort of...
That's very hands-on, isn't it?
It is hands-on. And you can see, you know, MDs, you know, if you've got good leadership, if you've got good leaders below you or better than you at what they do, then, you know, I need to work on the business, not in the business, but I've got people who do that. But there's nothing better as a leader than walking the job, going to the construction site, walking down the office, talking to the architects, talking to the cost consultants, talking to the guys who were many potholes all day, and they appreciate it. And I have no hierarchical... I'm not an hierarchical person. No, I don't have, I've never had a car parking space that's got MD's name on it. I think it's bureaucratic graffiti. I want to be accessible. There are times when I can't be accessible because of what nature of what I do. But you've got to be yourself. And I'd like to think I'm still the same guy I was at 18, just with a little bit more experience.
So now we're going to take a quick break from our chat to mention the MBA programmes at Nottingham Business School. As we've learned from many of our guests, effective business leadership is about confidence, adaptability, and thinking strategically. These are the key ingredients to delivering innovation and impact in crowded competitive markets. So if you are ready to transform your career, visit ntu.ac.uk/MBA to explore the MBA programs at Nottingham Business School. We're one of only 1% of business schools worldwide who hold the prestigious Triple Crown accreditation. That's ntu.ac.uk/MBA to find out more. Now back to the show. Okay, so there's the authenticity, there's the people skills. Is there anything else specific to construction? Because as you laid out in the answer to the first question, this whole area of work over the last 40 years has changed almost out of recognition, and certainly in the way that it's put together. What other skills are required for a leader in that, in your industry?
I think it's about all about collaboration. It's about what I said earlier on about listening to understand. You know, it's taking time to understand what people, where a client, or be it a contractor, or be it an employee is coming from. But if you don't listen to understand, you'll never really build that relationship with them.
So it's more of that patience.
It is patience. Sometimes I lose my patience because, it's not a loving. You know, we still got the traditional contractor and client relationship. Pounds and pence. But there's a way to get into that. I often talk in construction terms that you have a project, you build a school at £36 million. Contractor comes, we design it, we'll design that particular school, we'll cost manage it, we'll project manage it, but somebody builds that for us, be it Morgan Sindall. But what we do is they need to make a margin. There's nothing wrong in that. But we spend a lot of time playing games, trying to chase around, trying to save £5 a year. Well, if they have to make 7, 8% overhead and profit, then let's concentrate on the 92%. Just get the job delivered. It's a very simplistic way of looking, but that's the way I work.
So your career has straddled both public and private sector, and as you've talked about there quite enthusiastically, the collaboration between the two. Are there differences still between leadership and working in the two sectors?
No, I think the principles of good leaders transcend any client contractor relationship or any organisation, whether it's the chancellor at the Nottingham Trent University, or it's a managing director of a construction company, or some, and the role that I do across both fire and art partnership, that those traits of a good leader never change. They're still there. There are good and bad leaders in any organisation. I think the only difference between the public and the private sector is pace. And that's not because I don't think people in the public sector can't work at pace. Sometimes they're shackled. Whereas in the private sector, you're empowered to get on with things a lot more quicker and make decisions yourself. And that comes with a level of accountability that you have to stand up to. And that's the only difference, I think, between the new art partnership as a joint venture and Fire as a whole new system. We get the best of both.
Those are the two different business models, aren't they?
Yeah, the two different models. Yeah. Between Fire and East Midlands, we get the best of the both because we really still are public sector. We act as private sector companies operating within the public sector with a public sector ethos. So it's not just about making lots of money. It's about making a return that can be ploughed back into services that won't otherwise be delivered.
Okay, so I've read some of the stuff that you might have said or have written online, and there's a lot in there about integrating social value into what you do. And this is something which comes up in a lot of the conversations I have with leaders. The idea of taking a broader view of the role than you might have had to do in the past. Is that something you're conscious of?
I am, but I always have been. Back in the 80s, I worked in Sheffield City Council. The employment service was based in Sheffield City Council at Morfoot, just next to Bramall Lane, and I will get that in again. Here, Sheffield United's football ground.
Well done, shoehorned in.
And the first, I were very privileged that the first contract that ever had a social value clause in was given out in Sheffield.
So, and how was that? Explain the concept.
It basically, before, contracts were either delivered in-house, and we built schools, and you built buildings, and you did lots of different services, cleaning, catering, and highways and everything. But they were never really tied to social value. The real social value is that most of those services nationally were delivered what they call direct service organisations, but the council employed the vast majority of people directly to deliver those services on their behalf, and they lived and worked in the communities.
And that was the social value?
That was the social value at that time. And then at that time we had compulsory competitive tendering, and we moved to different models, and it broke that a little bit, because no longer did people work and live in that area. We thought we'd moved on a bit. Everybody got vans, everybody got new mobile phones. And I think that took something away from that original concept of why direct service organisations were set up to deliver local services by local people. And what Social Value Act has done, and Social Value over the many years, is actually built a buffer between the old and the new. Social Value were always there. But now we're having to formalise it a little bit more, because people are peripatetic, and you could have a contract where people are working from all over the county.
Okay, so I recognise what you meant by the old Social Value, and what you're saying is now that people have recognised it was lost a little bit, they've got to bring it back. How are they bringing it back? What is the new Social Value?
For me, when I first took this job on, probably about 8 years ago now, as Art Partnership, MD of Art Partnership, and more recently, last couple of years, as MD of Irish Midlands, the fundamental thing to me is about employing local people, about employing local subcontractors, employing local material, because we get the social value benefit of that, and the economic impact of keeping that spend within Nottinghamshire and Derbyshire. And we're talking that footprint now, because in the East Midlands and the East Midlands County Combined Authority is to bring inward investment across those two areas. And I think as a basic principle, and the new procurement regulations that come out nationally talk about local spend, I think we've got a real opportunity to make a difference through that way. Yeah, we still want apprenticeships. Yeah, I want a 3-year strategic partnership with Nottingham Trent University, bring people into my organisation rather than going off to London. I wanted to ply the trade here with us. But we've focused on that. And if I give an example, in Art Partnership, we've done just over 400 million in 8 years, and £344 million of that has been spent with local companies. On top of that, over 100 people working for that organisation, and over 98% of them live and work within Nottinghamshire and Derbyshire.
And do you find that there's a benefit? Do you find that there's an extra buy-in, an extra pride with people building new buildings and schools and hospitals and mending roads, filling in potholes within their own communities?
Yeah, because it's their communities. Just think about it. If you're building a school, more often, a lot of people work for our organisations, their kids and grandkids are going to that school. They'll be using that facility, that library facility. They'll be driving on, we all drive on the highways every single day, every day if we've got a vehicle, and it's their highways. And I think it does. But if I take you right back to when I started my career back in 1983, when all that were delivered beside the council, I think there were a greater link between what they did and the local community then, because it were very local.
But it wasn't very efficient, is that right?
It probably wasn't less efficient. It wasn't efficient. And that's why some of the benefits of some of the thinking around outsourcing and joint venture partnerships and different ways of delivering services. And it also helps the local authorities. I mean, the local authority we're very lucky that we've got Nottinghamshire County Council, and they have lots of demands on their budgets. And part of the jobs in both Envia and Art Partnership is to make sure we're as efficient as we can with the money that they give us for the schools we build and the roads we mend going forward. But social value has got to be at the heart of it, and it's got to be real, it's got to be tangible. And funny enough, we've got an event next week at the Belfry Hotel. We're bringing all our supply chain. We've just got an extension of our partnership through to 2031 in Art Partnership, and we're bringing our supply chain partnership to say thank you. And the council members are going to be saying that. The local senior client from the county council are going to be saying that, and I'm going to be saying that. And I think that's important, because they've played a massive role. And most of those local companies, being in Mansfield or in the Nottingham City Centre, or across Nottinghamshire, they employ people who live and work in that area. So they've had a benefit. It's a knock-on for in terms of their own aspirations, how they want to grow their businesses.
Good stuff. So, as you know, this is a pod for the Nottingham Trent University, and hopefully we're surrounded by leaders, would-be leaders, leaders of the future. So from looking back on your 40 years in construction, what one piece of advice, maybe pieces of advice, might you give to those people who are aspiring to take on leadership roles in the coming years?
It's nice coming here today and seeing all the students downstairs who want to do journalism.
And business as well, I hasten to add. I've got to say that because we're attached to Nottingham Business School.
And business school. But I look across Nottingham Trent University, it's really opened my eyes. It takes me back to Sheffield Hallam University when I were there, and I earned and I learnt as I went along. And there's nothing wrong with that.
It's a great phrase, isn't it? Earned and learned as you went along. That's going back and on.
And they were really lucky. I got paid while they sent me to university and did that.
You still do that, the apprenticeships.
And I think it's important that people have got... certain people are suited to different career routes. But what I really, really... Since I've been here 8 years and I've got to know the Nottingham Trent University really well. If you lift Nottingham Trent University up and applied it across the construction sector, there's not one course here... that wouldn't apply itself as an outcome in terms of jobs.
Industry facing.
It's totally industry facing. There's total alignment between Nottingham Trent University and the construction. I could take all my needs both within our civils department in VIA, civil engineering, right through to architecture. I could just get fed from the Nottingham Trent University. The amount of talent that's sat in this organisation is absolutely immense. But we need to keep it in Nottinghamshire.
Okay, so what's your advice for the leaders then?
I think the advice for leaders is be yourself. Don't try to be something you're not. Prepare to learn and be prepared to lose as well. It's not everything will go wrong. True leaders, I love Sheffield United. We played in the Premier League last year.
You mentioned that a couple of times.
It's a good example because if you think about a football manager, you're not going to win every game. Yeah? But... it's like in life, nothing goes smoothly and things will go wrong. But you sort them. It can be sorted. What you've got to do as a leader is... I've been very lucky. I've worked with some really, really good leaders. My leader in Sheffield City Council was a guy called Bob Kerslake. Became Lord Bob Kerslake. He was head of the civil service. And he kept in touch with me all the way through my career until, unfortunately, he died a couple of years ago. And my last dinner I had with him down in House of Lords, I had dinner with him. He invited me around, showed me around House of the Lords. It was a really lovely day. But he kept an eye on me all the way through my career. And we might slip away, not talk to each other for a couple of years. And then somehow he just again kept appearing and he must be monitoring what we're doing. And I've been very lucky that I've had a number of people I could go to as a mentor and say, I've got a problem here. I could pick a phone up. I could just talk an issue through with them. Because... it's as you go up further up your career as a leader, it gets more and more lonely. You know, you have to trust your own judgments every day. Is there a manuscript somebody gave me when I became an MD or a senior leader? No, you have to make it up as you go along. And you have to learn by your own mistakes, but you need guidance on the way as well and knowing where you can be signposted to someone to help you when it gets a bit tough.
Okay, so value those mentors and hold on to them.
Yeah, I think mentoring's absolutely important at any level of organisation. And leaders don't just have a title. You know, I honestly believe that leaders are in every part of an organisation. They might have a title to say I'm a manager or whatever, but you get different leaders. And some people don't want to be a manager, but they're still leaders.
Good stuff. Dan Marth, thanks very, very much for coming on to this episode of Nottingham Business School Business Leaders Podcast. I've really enjoyed that. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
If you enjoyed this episode of the Nottingham Business School Business Leaders Podcast, why not listen to previous episodes with the MD of construction company Morgan Sindall, Sean Bowles, the MD of Nottingham-based manufacturer Termate, Rob Swan, and the CMO of Boots UK, Pete Markey. This episode of the Nottingham Business School Business Leaders Podcast was produced and edited by Russell Bingley and presented by Mike Sassy.